When Harry Truman left Washington, D.C. and went home to Independence, Missouri, a reporter asked the former president what he planned to do first. Truman said he was going to carry the grips up to the attic. Leaving the White House has been a topic each Tuesday morning this month on Morning Edition. Today, NPR special correspondent Susan Stamberg examines the departure of Thomas Jefferson, America's third and in many ways most mysterious president.
First was Washington, second John Adams, then Jefferson. Historian Joseph Ellis, whose latest book is Founding Brothers, The Revolutionary Generation, says the shift from Adams to Jefferson was a transition of opposites.
Jefferson is fluid, enigmatic. Adams is candid, cantankerous. If Jefferson is the Mona Lisa, Adams is one of those Copley portraits that stares at you straight away. They're like the odd couple of the American Revolution.
Thomas Jefferson had served as John Adams' vice president. Then Jefferson ran against Adams for the top job. The election of 1800 was bitter and close. Jefferson and Aaron Burr tied in the electoral vote. Eventually, the House of Representatives gave Jefferson the presidency. Joseph Ellis says on John Adams' last day in office, Thomas Jefferson stopped by.
He goes to see Abigail and John in the presidential mansion and has lunch with them. John Adams then decides not to attend the inauguration. He takes the train out of town on the morning of the inaugural ceremony at 4:30, in effect making a statement that he himself does not endorse the presidency of Mr. Jefferson. And Jefferson walks down the street in the inaugural parade, much like Jimmy Carter did, although the street at that time, Pennsylvania Avenue, is strewn with tree stumps because it's barely finished, and delivers the first inaugural address, which is probably one of the two or three great inaugural addresses in American history that has the famous line, "Every difference of opinion is not a difference of principle. We are all Federalists. We are all Republicans." The first statement of real bipartisanship.
Necessary, Joseph Ellis says, because the election of 1800 was a watershed in American political history.
It's the first time when one party is displaced by another political party. The Federalists are replaced by the Republicans.
And so the circumstances of that transition were interesting because of their relevance to today?
I think so, and I think most especially because it sets the principle that the defeated party accepts the victor's occupancy of the presidency. During the time that the debate in the House of Representatives is going on to select Jefferson, the militia is forming in Pennsylvania and Virginia and ready to march on Washington if Jefferson is not elected. So there was really a potential for violence at this occasion. And remember, you know, there had never been a change in administration before in the American history. This is the first one. And so it's very important that that precedent be established. Jefferson called it the Revolution of 1800. What was mostly revolutionary about it is what did not happen. What happened was peaceful. There was no violence. Again, when we watch Mr. Clinton leave, it is a kind of spine-tingling moment when power, this enormous power, is transferred in an instant and with complete and total voluntary assent on both sides.
Thomas Jefferson's first term as president was a triumph. The Louisiana Purchase expanded the territory of the young nation. The Lewis and Clark expedition was launched. But Joseph Ellis says Jefferson's second term was a disaster. By the time he left the White House in 1809, another war with England loomed on the horizon.
He left office under a cloud. He was tired of the job. He was very eager to get back to Monticello and eager to turn over what was almost an inevitable war to his handpicked successor, James Madison.
Who did he go home to?
He went home to a slave population of about 200 at Monticello and to a family of about 12 grandchildren. And his eldest daughter, Martha, is the mother of those children. And she's the only surviving of his white children. We now believe that he also went home to Sally Hemings.
Sally Hemings and as many children as he had by her.
Right.
So it was quite a group to return to.
Yes, it was.
And a lot of responsibilities.
Well, and it's the kind of responsibility that he really relished. Jefferson really saw himself as a kind of pater familias, and he enjoyed the role of a father and saw himself as a father of his slave slave population as well as his own immediate family.
Jefferson was 66 years old when he left the White House. For the next 17 years of his life, his days typically began at 5:30 a.m. He wrote letters, lots of them, 12 to 1,300 a year. After breakfast, Jefferson worked in his gardens or rode through his property. As he got older, riding became easier than walking. There were afternoon games with his grandchildren, dinner at 4:30. Then conversation with his many house guests. At 9:30, the sage of Monticello retired to read the ancient classics, he said, Tacitus and Thucydides, before falling asleep.
The book that you wrote about him, you've called American Sphinx. I wonder why that title.
Because Jefferson is probably the most enigmatic figure in American history and the most the person who is the most resonant kind of icon. He's a kind of Delphic oracle, if you will. We read into him what we wish. And because he wrote the magic words of American history, the ones that begin, "We hold these truths to be self-evident," he's, you know, the kind of person who every political group in America looks to, from Ronald Reagan to Bill Clinton, as a kind of forefather. And so I call him a sphinx because he's enigmatic. And he's also, I think you might call him Clinton-esque in his ability to move around inside himself, his floating persona. He's a one-man coalition.
Thomas Jefferson was 83 when he died on the 4th of July, 1826, the 50th anniversary of American independence. He was $10 million in debt by today's currency. Jefferson felt his greatest achievement was not the Declaration of Independence, not his 2 terms in office. Rather, he was most proud of having founded the University of Virginia, which opened 16 months before he died. Joseph Ellis is professor of history at Mount Holyoke College. His biography of Jefferson is called American Sphinx. Ellis's most recent book is Founding Brothers, The Revolutionary Generation. I'm Susan Stamberg.